You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
What's up and welcome in special coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are coming to you live from Studio 34 in Manhattan, Midtown Manhattan, New York City, the shadows of Times Square, a hop, skip, and a jump away from the world's most famous arena. And today we begin the process towards the 2017 NFL season and, of course, the 2017 fantasy football season. The NFL Combine is underway in Indianapolis, Indiana. We'll spend the next 2 hours introducing you to some of the prospects, talking about their pros and cons, talking about their skill sets. We'll look at some teams at need. Today we're going to focus on the running back position as the running backs get ready to take the field at Indy and show off their skill sets with their 40-yard dashes and their combine workouts. Got two gentlemen along with me, of course, from RotoWestburst.com, my guy Mike Blewett. Football Game Plans, Emery Hunt. Get involved. You can follow both gentlemen on Twitter. As a matter of fact, follow us at FNTSY Sports Radio. And gentlemen, we begin the process. We begin to introduce fantasy owners to the fantasy football stars of the future. Mike, I'm going to start with you, brother. Thanks for being here. Are you a big combine guy? Because I know I certainly am. People call it the Underwear Olympics, but I always find myself watching it.
I am the same way. I always find myself watching as much as I can, and it's not necessarily that my opinions will change drastically. I'm really looking to see what the temperature is of the scouts, what the temperature is of those that are projecting the drafts and have pored through all the film, to see how things might change, how players might move up and down, exactly what teams, frankly, are looking at particular players. I think that's the thing I'm most interested in, is what teams start to get hot on a certain player. There's only so much you can predict before the draft, especially from a fantasy football output perspective. But that's what I like to see. Are the Browns really in love with Mitch Trubisky? Are the Jets really thinking about taking a running back at six? Those are the types of things I try to sift through here in this next week or two.
And one of the things we'll be talking about today, we're going to get into that hot and heavy into this 2017 running back class. Emery, for the most part, everybody is saying this is a deep draft, except for the quarterback position. But you, former running back in college, when you look at this running back class, what are you really looking forward to today as they get their chance to shine on the field?
You always want to see who's the fastest. That's the biggest draw to the combine, who's going to run fast, who's going to perform well in drills. And again, tape trumps everything, but the 40-yard dash, the agility drills, it's still very fun to watch.
No doubt about that. All of the things that we'll be breaking down, looking at, and stuff like that. Now, when you look at this event, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people downplay it. They poo-poo it. Oh, it's the Underwear Olympics. It's really about what goes on the field. Obviously, you're still going to have pro days coming and stuff like that. But one of the things I look at, Mike, is the fact that, you know, they call it the world's toughest job interview. You know what I mean? You could be getting ready for your bedtime. You know what I'm saying? You get a knock on the door. 2 a.m. in the morning. Hey, Mike, get up. You got to go get an MRI. The Buffalo Bills are worried, upset. The Buffalo Bills are concerned about your neck. When you look at things like that, I find that to be also a very interesting part of it, what goes on outside of the combine as far as not between the lines, but the mental aspect of it.
Well, I think the good news for the players is that this process has become so refined by the agents is that they are coached up on every level, right? We're not just trying to shave 1/15 of a second off your 40. We're trying to make sure that you answer things properly in that 15-minute speed dating interview that you have. I think to some extent, the teams would obviously want more access to the players. And yes, getting poked and prodded isn't all that fun, but through the other side of that tunnel, you may be an NFL draftee, so you're more than happy to do it, right?
Well, here's the thing. I feel as though if the teams didn't put as much emphasis on, let's say, the combine, the interviews and things like that, they probably would get real genuine answers and the truth coming from these players, as opposed to being coached up on how to answer this question or what to say, because no one wants to have coached up answers or get coached up answers. So I just hope that some teams probably do it the right way and just say, listen, you could be straight up with us. It's in this room is going to stay in this room. We won't have any Dez Bryant situations where stuff will get leaked out. But I just think that for the most part, the medicals and the psychological tests, those are the most important things. in addition to these testings. But I think that just getting a good feel for everyone and who they are as a person maybe could alter where you, let's say if you like a quarterback and you're torn between two, but this guy just seems like a good guy to be around, mm-hmm. let me just take him.
Yeah, your rapport, I think, especially that position, is going to be really important, right? The most important, there's two relationships in sports that are supremely important. One is the star basketball player and the head coach, right? And the star NBA player and the head coach. And the second one is the NFL quarterback and the head coach. And they have to be in lockstep with how they want to approach things. Granted, an offensive coordinator can be a conduit there, but it's extremely important that they get along well. And to your point about the Dez Bryant scenario, I think it emphasizes what's really important going into a process like this. This is a job interview, right? This is an organization hiring an employee. And if you can't trust, if one side can't trust the other, I'm sure Dez Bryant, when all of that stuff flushed out, was like, thank God I never played for the Dolphins, mm-hmm. right? Because, and what we're referring to, there were some rumors about questions that were asked, inappropriate questions that were asked during that interview process. And I'm sure Dez Bryant is, probably, long in his rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. He's thankful that Miami never got anywhere near.
That was Jeff Allen. I believe he asked Dez Bryant in the interview process if his mother was a prostitute. So, and like you said, Emery, what you touched on is, has this thing become so over publicized, so hyped up that we start to see, foolish questions like that come out in the process? Obviously, situations going on this year with the young man Joe Mixon, who is not in attendance. We'll be speaking about him. But when you look at it, the off the field stuff also plays a major role in this week. It's going to be guys that we're going to talk about, man, right off the top of the right off the rip. A guy like Dalvin Cook, who's sitting at number one on the board. He's a guy that has some off-the-field red flags. This is also a chance to look at that stuff this weekend.
Yeah, I think when you look at a lot of these red flags and what happens with these players, you want to see if it's recent or if there's been some years in between incidents, because that way you can tell if a guy has learned his lesson or if he's a repeat offender. I think that's the more interesting part about, let's say, when Cook had his transgressions to when Mixon has had his. I think when you look at, let's say, a guy last year in Dorial Green, back or 2 years ago, mm-hmm. he had that issue at Missouri, then went to Oklahoma, set out
same
the year,
thing.
Same thing, and it kind of got swept underneath the rug. Tyreek Hills was a little bit more recent, but it was still over time. He had done this, I believe, his freshman season at Oklahoma State. And I think if someone just did something recently, it would be more of an issue because, man, you're going to the NFL. Are you getting ready for this big job interview and you're still screwing up? Like, we're going to hear about guys that have failed drug tests.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can you do that knowing they're going to test you going into this process? So I think the more recent issues players will have and have had this season are more important than stuff that happened, let's say, 2-3 years ago.
And the irony of speaking about the drug transgressions and testing, I think the one thing that people may not realize is that while the NFL drug policy is somewhat extensive in what it covers and it's consistent, it isn't rigorous. You are told when you're going to be tested. You're certainly told that you're going to be tested at the combine.
Yeah, that's one right there. You probably shouldn't mess up.
And outside of that, you're really only getting tested between April and August. And if you never flag yourself during those months, you're fine for the rest of the year. So to extend that a little bit, if a player wanted to use marijuana throughout the regular season and was clean by the time April rolled around, he would never really have a problem. It's just players, frankly, not thinking it through how they're using this. And frankly, maybe one hand washes the other with them not having a clear head.
But when you talk about the marijuana thing and the off-the-field stuff, it's kind of like, do you say, for example, all right, wait a minute, the kid does have little things that go on, situations with a little marijuana or a little recreational marijuana use, but you know what? So does Le'Veon Bell. You know what I mean? They took a shot on him. Maybe in another direction, you can look at, well, Kenny Britt has some off-the-field issues, but he's fine now. Took him 10 years to get there, but he's fine now. Adam Pac-Man Jones, off-the-field issues, but he's fine now. You know, how serious are these? He's getting there. He still struggles from time to time.
Still calling him Pac-Man, so.
Yeah. He hasn't shook that label
not
yet.
All the way.
It's a real big part of what's going on out there in Indianapolis right now, too, because you have to realize if you're going to take a shot on these players. And, of course, the name that's coming up right now is the kid Mixon. Emery, I know you spoke about the kid Mixon last time that you were in here. you know, what do you think eventually, now that he had the combine, the Lions GM actually said that he thought it was unfair that the owners, I mean, the general managers, didn't get a chance to properly vet the kid.
Well, you look at, let's just say from a business perspective, who wants to travel when you don't have to? You know, this guy was coming to you at Indy. You had a chance to interview him, vet him, put him through all the rigors of the medicals and the psychological tests, and get the answer that you want. Now you have to go get that information in Norman, Oklahoma. That's just another day that you have to travel instead of going somewhere else and see a prospect that you may not have covered fully like you would have covered at the combine. So that's number one. Number two, from a football side of it, there should be no football questions you should have about Mixon because you've seen him play for two seasons. Your questions are what's most important, the mental and the psychological test, and you won't get that rawness at Oklahoma. You're going to get, you know, coached up answers. Then you have to spend more money, going back to the business side, to fly him in personally for these private workouts. So I think from a business perspective, that's why you're seeing the GM of the Lions feel that way. I think talent-wise, they're going to take him. He's going to get drafted. He's going to play in the NFL. I think from a business standpoint, the owners and general managers feel like we're wasting so much money when it could have been avoided by just having this guy here.
I mean, Emery makes a good point. The pro day is even more controlled than the combine.
Yeah.
And conditions are even less realistic than they are even at the combine, which isn't particularly realistic with nobody wearing pads or anything like that. No defenses coming at you. Mm-hmm. And Jameis Winston looked immaculate at the combine, and he looked better than the other guys, but honestly, he's throwing to wide open wide receivers in front of a broom handle or whatever it is that they try to throw up there. You know, I'd say the one last thing on the, for me, on the off the field stuff is, I think what's hard to sift through is that you have somebody like Dalvin Cook, where he's got 2-3 different things in his past, but nothing really in the last 8 years that's been of much consequence. Mm-hmm. You can chalk a lot of this stuff up, hopefully, to guys being 17-year-old knuckleheads. I mean, we all were knuckleheads when we were 17. You're shooting BB guns at people. It's stupid, but are you an arch criminal? Hopefully not. You have somebody like Aaron Hernandez. There's some red flags there. The red flags certainly weren't what they ended up being, and it's really difficult. How could anybody seriously project what some 17-year-old kid psychologically is going to turn into when he's 24? It's hard enough to evaluate offensive linemen from physical stature, let alone what's in their mindset. Yep. The hardest single thing to do for college coaches is to recruit offensive linemen because they have no idea if these guys can develop any kind of technique. And if they're not good enough at technique, they throw them on the defensive line and vice versa. They're constantly shifting those guys around. So to project what they can be mentally is way, way too tough.
No doubt about that. So another thing that goes on this weekend we've already had 2 days of it is the coaches, general managers, coaches, they get up to the podium, kind of a loose atmosphere, kind of a loose environment. So we're going to talk about some of the things, some of the notes that I picked up on while the coaches were on the podium, while the GMs were on the podium this past weekend out there in Indianapolis. Of course, I think everybody kind of wanted to see Kyle Shanahan, you know what I'm saying, just to make sure that he was still okay and all right. He was asked the question on the podium yesterday. He was asked, you know, about his final drive. He said, got a chance to sit back and rewatch it, and I can understand why I was second-guessed.
Well, at least he owned it, you know, because if he would have gave any other answer, it would have been like, you know what, you're lying. But I'm glad he owned it because there should be no reason why he got away from Devonta Freeman in that Super Bowl. They were going to blow out New England.
It's a mistake he's going to have to live with forever. That, what did they run the ball? I think they gave the ball to Devonta Freeman after they had the 25-point lead. They only ran it with him 4 times from that point on, so I think that's the number. But in any event, it's best for him to own it and move on. It's a new chapter for him. He's got a long-term deal with a long-term GM who they appear to be on the same page. There's obviously a lot of personal ties there. So the funny thing about the Lynch scenario is that all three of us had raised eyebrows or worse at the hiring because he wasn't doing that as a gig. Obviously, he's a Hall of Fame potential Hall of Famer on the field, and he was in the mix. He was studying in and around it, but none of us would have thought he was qualified to do that job right away. But what I do think is a positive for the Niners is that I think these two guys are on the same page. Yeah. Every interview I've listened to, they seem to be in lockstep with one another. It's really important for them to function well because the ownership, it doesn't function well at all. So if those two guys can just divorce themselves in some way from the owner making boneheaded decisions, then I think the Niners or have finally turned the page and moved forward. So,
Emery, did Mike Shanahan call in a favor for John Lynch?
I believe so. I believe he called him the guy that he can trust. And I think that's the most important relationship, like you said, coach, quarterback, coach, GM, because you're married at the hip. And if you have a guy that you can trust, that you trust, let's say from a football standpoint, to go out and find talent, then it's going to make your job as a coach easier. It's easy to coach when you have the better players. And it's easy to coach when you know the guy that's going to acquire the players has that cachet of he knows what he's doing, he knows what he's looking at. He's not going to try to be the guy, as you see in some organizations where the GM wants to be the story and more so sabotages what the coach is trying to do. You'll see someone, a situation where, and I hate to throw people under the bus, but you'll see a situation where a coach may look at Stephen Hill and say, he's not that good of a player. GM may look at it and say, he just ran a 4.3 at the combine. He's 6'5". He's Randy Moss. No, he's not Randy Moss. You know, being 6'5 and running a 4.3 isn't what makes Randy Moss Randy Moss. It's the fact that he can catch anything and also catch while on the move. But a GM and a coach will always have that philosophical differences. We know Bill Parcells said it best. They want me to make the meal, but they don't want me to buy the groceries. That's why I think Shanahan made that move for Lynch. And hopefully it works out for him because he can trust his football acumen.
Yeah, and just quickly on that, you see what happened with the Jets. They've gone through a couple of different regimes now, several GMs, and now we're looking at them blowing it all up. And if they don't really turn this around, and they're missing one piece this whole time, right? If they can't really turn this around and find a franchise quarterback, then this regime is going to be out too. So you talk about being married at the hip. It's coach, GM, QB. You have to make the right selection, and more importantly, develop him for the future.
And that's the part. I didn't want to cut you off, but that's the part. Let's say you look at Geno Smith, right? Talented player at West Virginia. Better receivers at West Virginia than he had with the New York Jets. You put him throughout the course of that season, you play him as a rookie with Jeremy Curley, you, me, and him at receiver. He still is able to go 8-8. They finally add Eric Decker. His passing numbers go up. The year they add Brandon Marshall, he gets into the incident with his teammate. He's out for the season. So a guy like that, you can say it's an incomplete because he really hadn't had the chance to be successful because of what they put around him. Now, juxtaposed to, let's say, what happened when the Colts drafted Andrew Luck. Instantly, they went ahead and drafted the two top tight ends in the draft in Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen. Then drafted T.Y. Hilton, and also the following year took Philip Dorsett and the kid Moncrief from Ole Miss. That's how you surround a quarterback with talent to give him the best chance for success.
When we return right here, we'll talk about some of the coaches and general managers, what they had to say when they were in Indianapolis, all that, and we'll start to look at these running backs when we continue right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network 2017 NFL Combine Special. Back up and Adam, 2017 NFL Combine on the television set. We're right here in the radio studio, Studio 34, getting you ready for introductions. Fantasy football stars of tomorrow. I'm the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, brought along with me my good buddy, my man, Mike Blewett, RotoExperts.com, and of course, Football Game Plans, Emery Hunt. All right, here we go, fellas. Every time a coach has a microphone in front of his face and he's moving his mouth, I like to give it a listen. These are coming at some of the things that I found out to be quite interesting over the past couple of days while the coaches took the podium in Indianapolis. John Harbaugh. Who's older, John or Jim? Anybody know?
Jim.
Jim's older?
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I was watching him, the video. And I don't know, it's just my mind, something just said in my mind, why this guy looks like Jim Harbaugh? Then I thought about it, they're brothers, probably why that happened. So there you go right there. Sometimes I get a little bit too deep into it.
It's early.
Yeah, it is. There you go right there. He was asked about Kenneth Dixon. He said, I'm a fan of Kenneth Dixon. He made me very proud. I'm excited, and I think Kenneth Dixon can be a top back in the NFL. I don't know if I'm going to go far to say they found their answer to this situation at running back. I think that they have found a nice complement. 4 yards of carry and limited work last year. Also was able to catch 30 passes last season. You know what? I think Kenneth Dixon is developing into a player. Hopefully injuries don't continue to be an issue for the young man.
Well, you just hope that, Baltimore isn't sitting there and they'll say a guy like Leonard Fournette is still on the board. then I'll erase everything he just said.
You think it's that serious?
Kenneth Dixon, absolutely. I think in terms of Dixon, I think he's nice at what they had him do last year. And if you sometimes less is more, you're going to get better production from a Kenneth Dixon than giving him that 25 carry total a game. It's the difference between how the Bengals utilize Jeremy Hill as opposed to Gio Bernard. Bernard carried the load at North Carolina and did it well, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be that guy at the NFL level. Sometimes you want a guy that's able to self-start quickly, and that way you can maximize his effectiveness. I think Dixon is one of those guys. He was talented at Louisiana Tech, had a really good week at the Senior Bowl, but I just think in Baltimore's offense, I think he's better suited as a number two guy as opposed to the starter.
That's interesting. I felt a little bit differently about Kenny Dixon when he was at Louisiana Tech. I thought he was going to be a guy that could slot in, but I think you make a great point about Gio Bernard. He's somebody I talk about all the time. Gio Bernard's way better touching the ball 200 times a year than he is 300. You know what I mean? They're better off having two backs there because Gio is so explosive that if you give him the ball in the right spots, he's going to be a guy that's takes your team to another level. If you try to give him the ball 25 times a game, he will get hurt, and then you're out of luck altogether. I think Kenny Dixon can carry the load a little bit more, but frankly, it's always good to have a second option there. So we saw what happened with them. They've run through running backs so much in the last two seasons. Why not add another one to the mix? There's very few teams that have a bell cow back now. There's a handful, and that's a pretty rare commodity. So to assume Kenny Dixon will be that for fantasy purposes, yes, it's somebody we could conceivably project, but we'll have to see what they do here with the draft and the free agency to see if they pass off some of those carries.
I think he projects as maybe an RB2 for fantasy purposes, mainly because of what he could bring you in the PPR. As much as John Harbaugh is talking him up right now,
John is older by 1 year.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
I do think that they bring in another piece to share that load with Kenneth Dixon. Vikings GM Rick Spielman said the Vikings would actually be interested in bringing back Adrian Peterson. Of course, he said expectations have changed, meaning the money has changed and his role is going to change also. I don't know. I think this thing right here is probably over for the most part, but I don't think they found their answer with Jerick McKinnon and Toby Gear. I mean, what's the dude name?
Asiata.
Matt Asiata. Yeah, I'm about to say Toby Gearhart. the ham sandwiches, and I thought McKinnon would be a much better player, but I don't think AP is the answer either, so unless they get him at a very good price.
Well, that's the point we just made about Dixon. Less is more. Look how great McKinnon looked last year with Adrian Peterson, and look how average he looked this year when they were expecting him to be the guy. Less is more in certain situations. And I think if you bring back AP, you still have to give him AP-type carries because he's not a self-starter. He's a guy that's going to get – he's explosive, but he's a guy like, let's say, like Herschel Walker. You want
to
give him –
he need to get warmed up.
Exactly, warmed up. So when the defense gets worn down, he's just hitting his stride, and that's when he rips off those 80-yard runs. But I think you're right. Not going to pay an older guy that much money. But we've seen him come back from a horrific ACL injury and rush for 2,000 yards. So who knows what we're going to get out of AP?
I think he's washed up, Mike. I think he's washed up.
I don't think you can really judge anything that the Vikings did offensively, especially on the ground last year, with any kind of accuracy because the offensive line was so bad. They had so many injuries. Forget when the season started and the guys that started going down. It started back in July when they had Phil Loadholt, a former standout guard for them, retire due to neck injuries. So they were already into their depth chart when the season started, and then Matt Khalil goes down, Alex Boone is hurt for a period of time. They had TJ Clemmings, who was a mid-round clear developmental player, this there at the back end of their offensive line rotation, starting at left tackle by the end of the year, and he got embarrassed, unfortunately, for him on national television.
It wasn't his fault.
Yeah, it's not really his fault. He's not supposed to be playing that position. So do I think they should re-sign Adrian Peterson? Only if he gave it to them for a song, and I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's better off going to somebody like he's floated out the Raiders. If he wants to be a rotational back on a team like that, that makes a lot of sense to me. If the Vikings are going to invest, it has to be at offensive line. Unfortunately, this 2017 season is maybe the worst year for an offseason outlook for offensive line. There's very little available in free agency, and it's a very poor offensive lineman draft, especially at tackle.
So there you go right there. I do think that the Minnesota Vikings also have greater needs to address, but I don't know if they're going to get a running back. I don't think they get a situation done. I don't think Adrian Peterson is the answer for them. Also, Doug Marrone hit the podium. I believe that was yesterday. Talked about Blake Bortles. He said specifically that they need to have better play around Blake Bortles on the offensive line. He also pointed out that Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon both need to do a better job. Once again, it's Fournette's on the board. What do you think?
If where the Jags pick? Fourth?
I had the order up here somewhere. That'd probably be a good idea right there.
if they pick fourth, then to me, you take quarterback because
you're not in on Bortles
at all. You know what he did? He just threw everybody else under the bus except the guy that's responsible for. You mean to tell me a team that has Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, T.J. Yeldon, who has tremendous footwork? They have good tight end talent. They've drafted along the offensive line very well.
But Bortles is getting beat up week after week, though.
They've drafted it consistently. I don't think they've done a particularly good job of developing these players, though. And Luke Jokel is a top pick, and he's a disappointment so far. Mm-hmm. I blame more the coaching staff than I blame Jokel with young players like that. But it is definitely still a need, unfortunately, offensive line.
And you also look at the fact that these game-clinching interceptions –
yeah,
that go for touchdowns. That's something that's a problem. And to say they have to play better around him, who's the guy throwing the football? That's the one that's the issue. But to your point, they spent a lot of money in free agency. They bring in Chris Ivory, who I like to say is a crash test dummy as a running back. Yeah. He doesn't avoid tacklers.
No. Vaughn Miller said he's never been hit that hard in his life.
Exactly. And for Ivory, you can't depend on him because of how he runs. Yeah. He's a guy that people may think a guy like Donnell Pumphrey at 175 pounds won't last in the NFL. No, it's guys like Chris Ivory that won't last, that don't avoid tacklers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an issue for them. And if teams don't respect your passing game because of your quarterback, it's going to make it tougher to run. That's why the Vikings had a lot of issues last year, because they didn't respect what Sam Bradford did. So they tightened up things back deep, a lot of dump offs and things of that nature, which is why Todd Gurley had issues running the football as well. So I think until Jacksonville gets better at quarterback, they won't get better as a whole.
You mentioned pick sixes. Blake Bortles has 11 wins as a starting quarterback in the NFL. He also has 11 pick sixes in his career. So it's really not a comparable stat. It's really a tough base to build off of. He's obviously been challenged a lot in the media by Coughlin, a little bit by Marrone. I think he's trying to deflect some of that pressure off of Bortles. I think this is his last year. It's a prove it year for him.
No, never.
If they went QB, that wouldn't shock me totally. But I think they have some needs in other areas that they could conceivably address. You know, there isn't a lot of offensive line talent, but there'll be a couple of tackles at least available. I would think they go that route. Maybe defensive line if Jonathan Allen slips to them at four. It's a team that the people thought was on the come for 2016. I thought it was at least a year too early for them. There's a lot of young defensive talent there, Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey. If they can get that moving in the right direction, I think they'll be okay defensively. But they just – any offensive numbers that Bortles put up for the last two seasons was all garbage time. Talent at wide receiver, but if you can't protect the quarterback – and he's throwing pick sixes, you're just behind the eight ball each and every game.
But at some point, you as a quarterback got to get out the way. You're a mobile. Yep. He's a mobile guy. Compare him to, what, Ben Roethlisberger or something like that?
His athleticism is pretty impressive.
Exactly.
He's more athletic than Roethlisberger from a base level. And he can get out and he can run it. He can get it into the end zone when he needs to. But you're right. He's got to
self-preservation.
Just go the Sam Bradford route. Just exactly. So you don't get killed. Yeah. Just dump it off 4 yards down the field. You know, the Julius Thomas experiment didn't work out, but
they have some work to do, man. And Bortles kind of is the point you made earlier when he came out. You had a season and a half of Bortles, more so than what you have with Trubisky, but you still didn't know how he would progress over time. Even within that outstanding Fiesta Bowl, I think it was against Baylor, you saw some good things. And you saw some things that, hey, that ball will get picked off in the NFL. And I think we saw that throughout the course of his career. I just think that he has to find that flat line stability, either be terrible or either be good. You know, you can't be good and terrible throughout the course of a season. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in quarterback purgatory, as they call it.
All right, when we return, we continue to put our ear to the street, coach speak, GM speak, let you know what they were saying out there in Indianapolis and how that can prepare you for the 2017 season when we continue with our special coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine. The NFL, 365 days a year. There is no offseason. Back up at Adam. Fantasy Sports Radio Network 2017 coverage of the NFL Combine. They're out there on the field right now in Indianapolis, Indiana, showing off for the scouts, the GMs, whatever you may, whatever else you may have out there. We are in the comfort of our palatial Studio 34 right here in New York City, Midtown Manhattan. Back to the podium, fellas. Les Snead, that is the GM over there for the Los Angeles Rams. And he was asked the question that I was wanted to ask right off the rip.
He's got a lot of questions.
Yeah, you know, he does have a lot. He has a lot of questions to answer. You're right about that. But for what we do for fantasy, he was asked, what the hell happened to Todd Gurley in 2016? He more or less said it was a sophomore slump and that they needed to put better pieces around Todd Gurley. Last year, going into the season, everybody would say to me, what about Todd Gurley? You know, there's nobody on the offense besides him. I said that Gurley was good enough player to where he was such a beast, he didn't need nobody else in that offense. He could carry it by himself. Mike, I was mistaken. Gurley was just really abysmal this season.
I mean, I hitched my wagon to him as well. I just, you know, when we're trying to do what we do from a fantasy perspective, you're looking at opportunities. And I thought, and ultimately, I was right on the number of opportunities he would see. He's 278 carries plus 43 receptions. That seems like going into a given year, you got to feel good about that number of touches for a player that talented. Now, the offense completely broke down in just about every game. The offensive line play was abysmal. The quarterback play was, at that point, or worse. The coaching staff ends up getting fired. There's a lot of questions in the building. The coaching thing really, it really started to bubble over into the play on the field, right? A lot of uncertainty. Even for a coach like that who had a lot of experience, it was a story every week. How is Jeff Fisher hanging in there? And they started out this season okay from a record standpoint, and then it fell apart. Teams sort of picked apart what they could do and how they could control Gurley in the offense. And, you know, I can't say that I expected that lack of production, the 885 rushing yards plus 327 with six touchdowns, those numbers in and of themselves are okay, but they never had any huge games, and ultimately the yards per touch were just way worse than I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Emery, is it a situation of a sophomore slump, or do you think like the players around him are trash?
I don't think, the sophomore slump doesn't exist. Because you never say that if a guy comes back the following year, his sophomore year, and plays well. Yeah. You know, so it's just, he just had a bad season. But I think something, and you don't normally don't get much from television, but I think something in the Hard Knocks series kind of foreshadowed what was going to happen in the regular season. I don't know if they did this with Gurley as a rookie, but remember how they couldn't touch him during practice? Mm-hmm. Don't tackle him. Don't hit him. So I don't know if that kind of sort of permeated throughout the course of his entire time at training camp in the preseason. Oh, I'm not going to get touched. They're going to treat me like the star, and I'm going to be ready to go week one when you really need those football reps, those getting tackled situations, getting contact. And if you're not getting that until week one, you're not going to be ready until about week five or six. That combined with the fact that their quarterback play was terrible. And once teams figured out all they have is Gurley and all they're going to try to do is run the ball, it's easy to play the run and just get pressure on third and now long against both those quarterbacks.
I mean, they could have played 11 in the box at times during the year and the quarterbacks wouldn't have been able to
one-on-one coverage on the outside.
It's just
nothing can get done.
You know, the Keenum to Goff passing in the torch was uninspiring, to say the least.
And they were 4-5 at that point. So Keenum was playing solid enough ball to win games. They were losing some close games. And then once you throw Goff in there, he was shell-shocked from snap one. It all fell downhill.
Reality in that, and I was critical of the Rams for drafting a guy number one overall and taking 8 months to still not have him be ready. You have to stick to your guns. If you think he's a guy that can't play as a rookie, then don't let him play as a rookie. It doesn't matter that you spent the number one pick. That's a sunk cost. He is your future of your franchise. Don't throw him out there if he's 21 years old and you think he's going to be shell-shocked.
Mm-hmm. Ruin his confidence just
He's got to be better. He's got to be good enough to get over the confidence thing. But if he's not ready to play, don't put him out there. And unfortunately, they didn't have anybody in the building that can really develop quarterbacks in it. And I've heard Trent Dilfer talk about it a lot because he's tight with Goff. Mm-hmm. That's what he was worried about.
It's funny to
He doesn't know Chris Winkie could do the job or anybody else there could. So now that's all cleaned out. We'll see how it goes.
But that's what I was about to say. The guy that they brought in to help him, Winkie, is now with Alabama. So there you go. Yeah. You know,
John Fox yesterday at the podium said he was very impressed with his rookie running back, Jordan Howard. Says he expects big things for Mr. Howard. Howard did put up a very good season. Mike, I'm going to ask you about the fantasy thing. Now he's going off the board right in that first, second round range, Jordan Howard. I don't know if I'm ready to pay that for a possible sophomore slump.
I don't even know. Well, you know, I'm with Emery a little bit on the sophomore slump thing. Yes, there's overall, statistically, there's a little bit of a trend, but as you said, we never celebrate the guys when he's a sophomore superstar, right?
Right.
So the Jordan Howard thing, I'd feel a lot better if I had any idea who the quarterback was going to be. Mm-hmm. If you asked me right now and pinned me to it, I would say it's probably Brian Hoyer. They use him as a bridge for another year until they figure it out. Doesn't mean that they don't draft somebody this year, but I think Brian Hoyer is maybe the guy there that can give them a favorable deal, bridge quarterback for next season, which is okay. But what is your upside there? What is the offensive line going to look like? The irony of Jordan Howard is that offensive line wasn't great, and they did suffer some injuries, but he did perform well overall. So to me, that is actually a huge positive. I mean, he touched the ball 280 times, yet another positive. Didn't catch a ton of passes, but is he going a little bit too early for my taste? Probably. I really want one of those top three backs before I dip my toe in the water. I'm more likely to take a safer wide receiver, but we also thought you thought Sammy Watkins was, and I thought Keenan Allen were safer wide receivers, and that didn't really work out. So,
Emery, when you look at his skill set, scouting report on Jordan Howard, do you think he can keep this going?
I think he's a basic running back, and that's not a knock. It's just that I think he's probably an average player. I look at him in the same lens that I look at Latavius Murray, and everybody was like, I kept saying, even back when the Cowboys had Darren McFadden, and I was in my then November mock draft, so it was my midseason mock draft of going into the last year's draft, I had Ezekiel Elliott going to the Cowboys. People were saying, well, why would they do that? They have Darren McFadden, who's having a great season. I'm like, but he's average right now. And just like I think the Raiders need a running back, and it's funny that they let go Murray.
They let go Lat Murray.
Exactly, because he's an average, despite rushing for 1,000 yards. That's not a knock at all. It's just that you can do better. And I think Howard is a guy that's going to be basic. And when you have basic players and you're trying to get superstars, you're going to get rid of these guys. And I think a guy like Howard is going to end up going the same route that we saw Alfred Morris go, that we saw Latavius Murray go.
I love Alfred Morris. I don't understand why people treat him like this. Well, he don't catch the football. That's why.
Well, like Pierre Thomas, too. You know, for some reason, Sean Payton kept thinking Reggie Bush, C.J. Spiller, or Mark Ingram were not better football players than Pierre Thomas, and kept giving an average player carries and leaving touchdowns on the bench. And I think that's what's going to happen with Jordan Howard. Because remember, it was supposed to be Langford, who was an average back. Mm-hmm. And then Howard came in and rushed for 1,000 yards. It's great to get 1,000 yards. You only need 65 yards a game. If you're getting the bulk of the carries, you're going to hit 1,000 yards if you are an average back. So I would say, from a fantasy perspective, I wouldn't touch him until you are at that running back two or three range.
When you look, next guy, Kyle Shanahan, my boy, Kyle Shanahan, he was asked more about, you know, he was actually asked about San Francisco, not just Atlanta. He said that Carlos Hyde has a lot to his game and he's very impressed. Been scouting him for a while since he was, you know, with the Browns. They were looking at Carlos Hyde back in those days. Carlos Hyde probably is the real only true dangerous offensive piece on this San Francisco team. Shanahan is in love with him. I think the Shanahan system actually sets up pretty well for Carlos Hyde in 2017 if they can get the pieces around.
Yeah, so I felt like we knew the Niners were going to be a bit of a dumpster fire last year going in, right? There wasn't a lot of pieces that you liked there, from the coaching staff to what they were looking at quarterback with Gabbert going into the year. But the one guy who I really do think is a talented player is Carlos Hyde. Do I think he's at the level of David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Zeke Elliott? No, but I felt like some people were downgrading him because he doesn't appear at times to be explosive. I think he does everything pretty well, and I think he'd be a guy that could thrive, again, as you start to build around him. I mean, the Niners are really starting from a base level. Yep. That was a very depleted roster last year. If it weren't for the Browns, you could argue that the Niners had the worst roster top to bottom in the league. They, you know, it wasn't really fair to Chip Kelly, frankly, and you can argue all day long the merits of Chip Kelly in the NFL, but it wasn't fair to him to give him that roster and say, all right, run with it. He had a quarterback controversy, for lack of a better phrase. I didn't even know if I'd call it that because Kaepernick was obviously the superior player, but he doesn't play going in. You got no offensive linemen. You got a bunch of guys, frankly, that retired a couple of years prior. The roster was at such an all-time low last year. It's good for Shanahan to Lynch to have this and Lynch to have this long-term deal because it allows him to build stuff around Carlos Hyde. He's probably the most talented offensive player on the team, more so than Torrey Smith.
Yep. You know, I agree. And then that's an interesting case when you look at San Francisco, because all we heard throughout the season was Carson Wentz need weapons. But can you name any of the receivers outside of Torrey Smith on that 49ers roster? I believe the leading receiver last year was Jeremy Curley.
Oh, he was.
And you look at Colin Kaepernick, who was hurt all of training camp, didn't really get healthy until they finally put him in the game, which was midway through the season. And he threw 15 touchdowns to only 4 intercepts and completed over 60% of his passes with a lot of drops with that average receiving core. So I agree with you. Chip Kelly got a raw deal. He got his quarterback back healthy late in the season. And now Kaepernick opted out of his contract. If I were San Francisco, I would try to bring him back in because now he's going to be fully healthy and get back that weight that he lost rehabbing his shoulder. But you're right. Carlos Hyde probably is the only decent offensive weapon they have. They had those offensive linemen retire. Receivers are a dumpster fire, to put it nicely. They have a lot of room to build. They have a lot of land to build on because they have offensively, they have a lot of land. I think defensively, they have some pieces, but that offense has to get better. And I don't know how many selections they have in this year's draft, but you think, you know, pick one or pick number two probably is going to be a quarterback. If not, then you probably look at maybe like a dynamic talent that maybe a Fournette to team up with Hyde, have that 1-2 combo of the same ilk of type player. But I think San Francisco in this draft has to build on that offense, and I think they will, looking at who their head coach is.
Before we head out to break, and then on the other side, when we get back, we'll continue. We'll start to get into this year's running back class and start to break these gentlemen down. Pete Carroll on the podium yesterday said that C.J. Procise and Thomas Rawls will compete for the top running back spot in Seattle. Who wins that job?
That's a good battle, actually. I kind of like Procise as a player, but I get concerned in what we're talking about earlier with like a Gio Bernard type. Like, is C.J. Procise really the guy that you're going to give the ball to 25 times? No. But does it really matter who starts if you have a backfield like that? I think a Rawls-Procise 1-2 duo, why couldn't that be the Gio Bernard-Jeremy Hill of the NFC? I don't think it – for me, I don't know if it'll matter. You know, you look at – the tandem in Atlanta, which is probably the best right now. You have the tandem in Cincinnati, which is really good. Why not just make this the tandem and not worry about Rawls having to get the ball 20 times? He sometimes makes you think he's the player that needs that momentum, but it wouldn't really concern me. I think they're both valuable, and you have to look at them in the same way, in the same light as you might look at the Bengals running backs.
Yeah, I'm reading the tea leaves on this one. I think they go into the draft and take a guy that they will be their bell cow, because those two guys, availability is your best ability. They both are always injured.
Mm-hmm. There you go right there. When we return on the other side, we begin to break down the 2017 running back class right here on our Combine special on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Running back sitting atop of the 2017 running back class is a young man, born and raised in the county of Dade, fresh out of Dade County, Miami, Florida, Liberty City's own Dalvin Cook, comes from the same coach in school as Devonta Freeman, of course, Florida State guy, 5'10", 210 pounds, number one running back on this season's draft board. You know, not consensus, but the view of many people. Here we go, Mike. We got the Florida State kid, Dalvin Cook, sitting up here at one. Shoulder injuries, a problem. Ankle and hamstring injuries also have been a problem. And, of course, the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, so we talk about, I think Leonard Fournette weighed in at 240, right? It's going to be the highest since they've been tracking this. He'll be, if he were drafted in the first round, which we anticipate, to be the heaviest running back ever to be drafted. And I say that only because do you have concerns about whether or not Fournette could be versatile, which is really what we see from a lot of our top backs now, right? Le'Veon Bell can catch over 80 passes. David Johnson can do the same. Zeke Elliott, honestly, he can do what he wants. They don't throw it to him as much, but Zeke Elliott is obviously good in both facets of the game as well. And I think Dalvin Cook mirrors those guys in that same way. I'm not putting him on that level. It's a little bit too high of a praise, but I think Dalvin Cook can be that versatile back and is somebody like Devonta Freeman, who he had some question marks, not the same types of question marks, but he had some question marks about whether or not he can shoulder the load. He basically, I mean, he had them. He had won them the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say it because I can still get frustrated with how that game unfolded, but he had them in the catbird seat to win the Super Bowl. If they gave him the ball a few more times, they win.
Yep.
Dalvin Cook could be that guy. If he's on a team with a whole bunch of pieces, he could come in right away and explode. I get worried when I see him projected to go to the Jets because that's a wasteland right now. Yeah. They have made a decision, for example, in the last, literally in the last
to
week.
To give up.
We're done with 2017. Everybody's gone, including Brandon Marshall, who was under contract. We're just going to let him walk, and we're starting over. So for him to land at a team like that, I would think would be really unfortunate if he, you know, if he gets to a team like the Panthers, who do have a lot of pieces around him to project, or somebody trades up to go get him, which you don't see too much with running backs. But I like his versatility. Is he as good as Devonta Freeman? I think some people have, you know, a lot of people have him graded higher than Freeman coming out.
Yeah, I definitely do. I think Cook has what you want in a first round back, that home run hitting ability. And you brought up some great points and just made me think about him teaming up with a guy in Jacksonville and T.J. Yeldon. That's a very good 1-2 punch with Cook leading the way, getting 20 carries, because we've seen him just be that explosive talent. Against Michigan, you saw him get down the sideline on a wheel route and leave defensive backs catching the football and running downfield. So you're absolutely right. That versatility is what you want out the position. And I think Fournette is more of a traditional back receiver as far as your swing screens, flare outs, but a guy like Cook is someone you can actually utilize in your passing game downfield more because of his natural receiving ability as opposed to just basic back receiving responsibility.
Let me ask you this, E, the shoulder, you know what I'm saying? Been dealing with the shoulder since high school, you know, it flares up again in college. I'm quite sure right now in Indy, maybe Dr. James Andrews got him someplace looking at his shoulder right now. That shoulder is going to be something that's going to be keyed on, because when you're in the running back, you know what you got to do, unfortunately. You got to block. And being able to block, and your shoulder is a part of that.
Well, he does a good job in blocking. I think, you know, because I'll tell you right now, I've been on team no running back blocking forever. Like, no running back loves to block. But he does a good job of it, at least getting in the way and knowing who to block. I think that's important. You only have to block for about a second and a half, and he does that exceptionally well.
Just give Devonta Freeman a call.
And you look at him with the shoulder. I think what's funny is that as explosive and as dynamic and fast as he is, he's stiff athletically, which lends itself to injuries. So he's going to have those fast guy injuries, the hamstring. He's going to have those shoulder injuries because he's built funny. You know, he's more legs than torso. And he's a little stiff in his movement, so he's not as fluid as you would like to see, which is why he probably takes a lot of contact on that shoulder. He can't contort his body a certain way to avoid or lower it to where it doesn't, you know, absorb a lot of contact. I think that's an issue for him, which is why you probably see him tend to go out of bounds a little bit more so, as opposed to lowering that shoulder because of how he's built. I think that's something you have to worry about, but with his talent, I'd be willing to gamble on that 10 days out of 10.
This is definitely a first round guy. This is not
absolutely
okay, because you know one thing I worry about these kids coming out, these running backs coming out this year, is the immediate comparisons. Can you do for me what Ezekiel Elliott did for Dallas? See what I'm saying?
It's too much. Yeah. Too much to put on these guys. Zeke fell into a, I mean, that's a once in a generation spot to land in. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell fell into good spots, but Zeke behind what is, by a significant margin, the best offensive line in the league. You can't really count on that for anybody else.
All right, when we come back on the other side, we're ready to hop into hour two of our special coverage of the 2017 NFL Combine. Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, amongst others, that players that we'll be talking about. Also, these players got to go somewhere. We'll look at some teams that need help at the running back position as we get ready for hour two on our special Combine coverage.